pick up where we left off this morning. Most all of the week we're going to be talking about child training, rearing our children, but we want to spend some time here at the first talking about the basis of the home that begins with that man who has left his father and mother and cleaves to his wife, and talking about that relationship. We went over that in Ephesians 5, the focus, although you can find other focuses in other texts, the focus in Ephesians 5, verb-wise, is husband, love your wife. Give yourself up for her, like Jesus did for the church. Wife, submit yourself to your husband and show him that respect and follow him. And we talked about how that fit particular the psyche for both the man and the woman. It doesn't mean that that's all there should be, but those things are very fundamental. And so if you or I are looking into our own relationship, and it's not our job to do the other person's job, but it's our job to do our job. And when each of us are doing our job, it makes our spouse's job much easier. When we are loving our wives, it makes it easier for them to respect us. When you are respecting your husband, it makes it easier for him in showing that love. Both sides work. In fact, in marriage counseling, I think one of the greatest texts is Philippians 2, which is not about marriage, but it's just a lot of important principles. And it's look not each of you to your own things, but to the things of others. Husbands, remember your vows. Maybe you wrote some vows out. Maybe you repeated some vows. Hopefully you thought about them either way. But a vow before God, before the witnesses, before her father and her mother who are letting you marry their daughter, what were some of the things we said? That you said, do you take this woman to love and cherish from Ephesians 5? To honor her, 1 Peter 3. To keep yourself to her and her alone until death do you part. So, a challenge to husbands. Does your wife feel loved and cherished? Do our wives feel honored? If they don't, we've got work to do to make them feel that way. And are we keeping ourselves to her and her alone? We're going to spend some time focusing on that. I'm not going to spend as much time as I would have because I understand that Lance has covered this just recently, so I won't spend as much time. We'll go through it quicker. But this is getting to be a bigger and bigger problem. You go back to the Ten Commandments, and of course, one of them was, thou shalt not commit adultery. And I tell you what, it's heartbreaking to see what happens in families when somebody starts forsaking their vows and the almost spiritual insanity that goes on in their minds once they want to be somewhere else. Thou shalt not commit adultery. And the problem of pornography. Look how many of these commandments are violated also along with pornography. In Matthew chapter 5, it says, starting in verse 27, Matthew 5, 27, you have heard that it was said, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone that looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. Now, that doesn't mean he's committed adultery with her in the flesh, but it does mean he's done it in his heart. And so just two quick things about that. That will send you to hell as surely as the other. It doesn't mean you might as well go ahead and commit the second sin also. In the context right before this, it talked about you have heard that you shall not kill, and then he's talking about being hateful and angry. Don't do either. But it kind of makes a difference. If you're feeling hateful and angry, you're already in sin and you're already wrong, but it kind of makes a difference to other people whether or not you go ahead and kill them. Likewise, if you have sinned and you are lusting after somebody else's wife or somebody else's daughter, etc., etc., don't think, well, I'm already in sin, I might as well go ahead. But the condemnation is there. You've already committed the adultery in your heart. So coming back to Ten Commandments, there was don't commit adultery. Well, you're doing it in your heart. And thou shalt not covet your neighbor's wife. And don't bear false witness. When we made our vows, I take this woman to keep myself to her and her alone. It's be faithful to that. Think of, in the very beginning, you had a man and a woman and a garden. And we can think of our marriages that way. There's a man and a woman and a garden. And sometimes you need a fence around your garden. And it helps protect the garden. And we need fences around our marriage. And some other things that come into gardens are weeds. And so you know what you need to do? You need to keep busy getting the weeds out, not letting weeds take over. And you need to make sure it's watered and nourished. And that's what you want to do. Pornography is a problem where people are bringing in, and let me just put it this way. Probably you saw in the news that the owner of the New England Patriots was arrested recently in connection with prostitution sting or a number of arrests down in Florida. And of course, that was pretty disgusting that this man was going to this place and paying for these women and such. And I would be thrilled. I would be so happy if there is not a single person in this auditorium that doesn't need what I'm about to say. But based on numbers, there certainly is, no doubt, people here that need to hear this, whether young or old. To give you an example on numbers, if you remember some years ago, there was a religion organization called the Promise Keepers, and it was men with religious backgrounds. It was kind of a denominationally connected organization promoting family. And there was a survey done, and they asked those men who were making promises to be there for their wives, be there for their kids. They surveyed those men. 56% of them had recently viewed pornography. That's horrific. But if you look at what Robert Kraft apparently did, apparently rests on whether he ends up being convicted or not. There's certainly lots of people that do that type of thing. What's the difference between that and the person sitting at the computer? There's a lot of visual prostitutes online. You know what one of the differences is? The in-the-flesh prostitutes have to at least spend a little bit of time with you. The ones on the internet don't even have to care enough about you to be in the same state or country with you. And don't, and aren't going to bother to be around you. And yet there are people that will betray their spouses and betray themselves and betray the will of God for that kind of thing. If you're doing that, you've got to start being realistic with yourself and change. You have to change. I'm sick and tired of what I've seen destroy people's lives with that stuff. I remember one friend who repeatedly got himself into trouble, and at one point his 16-year-old's, you know what his 16-year-old son's job was at home? You know, you might think taking out the trash or washing the car. No. His job in the family was try to keep dad off internet porn from sitting at the computer watching. That was his job. He ended up calling me one day. He was leaving for California to meet with some woman or whatever. And I let him know. I said, your life is not as far down as it's going to be. He said, I have to see where this is going to go. Well, and wasn't long after that, he was in the psychiatric ward, and wasn't real long after that, he was dead of whatever he ended up dying. He did repent before he died, but shortly before he died, he was telling a young man, a young teenager, said, don't waste your life on pornography, which is what he did. He started it as a teenager. He never gave it up. I knew another young lady, married a man, did not realize he had this problem. She ended up being strangled, did not die. He ended up in prison. It goes on and on and on. Let this not be named among us as becometh saints. Remember your vows. And gentlemen, suppose somebody here hasn't been anybody with anybody but their wife, and they're not viewing pornography, but there's that girl at the office that's pretty friendly to you, and you don't mind being kind of friendly to her and kind of bantering around, and she's kind of cute and she's kind of friendly, and maybe you don't ever plan to be anywhere with her or anything, but just you've kind of noticed her and she's kind of noticed you. You need to think seriously about what's going on there. Watch what you're saying and maybe get a different job depending on what's going on there. Because when some of you have heard people say this, somebody will get themselves in an adulterous situation, and when they're talking about it later, they say this, it just happened. No, it doesn't. It doesn't just happen. When people talk about two consenting adults, there were two consenting adults. And there were behaviors and decisions involved in our language and where we put ourselves and how we comport ourselves and what we do physically that starts showing consent that arranges for those type of things to happen. Now, many times people will go where they did not intend to, kind of like swimming close to Niagara Falls. I want to get close enough to hear the water. A stupid idea. In clothing, and ladies too, in clothing, communication, compliments, be careful about what compliments you pay. I remember one elderly gentleman was in the habit of giving what he considered to be compliments, and what ended up really being was a dirty old man. Contact, companionship, closeness, imagination, intimacy, love, desire, loyalty. Remember where your loyalty is and honor that. Let marriage be had in honor among all. The Lord has been witness between you and the bride, you and the wife of your youth. She is your companion and your wife by covenant. Turn, please, to Proverbs chapter 5. Listen to the warning here. Proverbs 5, 6, and 7 are all powerful. We're not going to read all of those. We're going to read a few verses from chapter 5. And this is written for men, especially perhaps young men. Listen to this, fellas. All of us pay attention to this. But listen to these words. Verse 1. My son, be attentive to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion, your lips may guard knowledge. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey. Her speech is smoother than oil. In the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. So what's there? Her lips, they drip honey. If somebody here has noticed that girl at work and she's noticed you and she's giving you those flattering comments and that type of thing, she knows what she's doing. She knows how to get to a male's ego. And he kind of likes hearing those things. And I tell you what also, as Christians, when we are trying to help people, be wise. Be wise. If you're trying to help a young lady with a problem, you and your wife help that young lady with her problem. You don't need to go being alone with her to help who are. It may start off perfectly innocent, but here's what happens sometimes. A fella, he's going to help this young lady who's in a difficult marriage or difficult problems, and he feels sorry for her. And so the knight in shining armor wants to come out and help her because, oh, he feels so sorry for her. And he listens, and she describes her sorrows and her bad situation, and he's attentively listening. You know what one of the main complaints a lot of wives have about their husband is? He doesn't listen to me. So you've got a woman who's unhappy in her marriage, and now you're sitting there doing what? You're listening. And you're empathizing with her, and it doesn't mean this is where she wants it to go either, but she can start saying things like, oh, your wife is so lucky. You know, to have a man like you, she is so lucky. Oh, I wish my husband was like you. A friend of mine got himself tangled up in one of these situations, and he later said, he said, I was arrogant. I thought, this won't happen to me. And then he got his heart all wrapped up in another woman. He got out of it, but not after a lot of pain and hurt and unnecessary things that didn't need to happen. But as she starts talking about how much she appreciates and admires him, he started off these sessions trying to help her, but now it's kind of enjoying these sessions, because when he goes home and walks in the door, his wife's not saying, oh, I'm lucky to have you. Oh, I'm so happy. She's saying, I thought you were going to get the milk, or I thought you were going to mow the grass. And he starts noticing that he kind of likes hearing, oh, your wife is so lucky, a lot more than why didn't you mow the grass. And so he gets interested in continuing those sessions, and pretty soon you have an emotional affair, which will very, very easily lead to a physical affair. But you've already entangled the heart. So you say, my wife and I will talk with you. But then there's the one who is an adulteress, and she's not talking about her problems. She's out for attention. And she may be flirting with you. She may be flirting with somebody else. And her lips are dripping honey. In the end, she's bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her feet follow the path of Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander. She does not know it. As Bella was flirting with this girl at work, his wife found the notes, and he came and to talk about the problem there. And he quit the job, which he needed to do, but it was ridiculous. So here's the notes where she's talking about how attractive he is and how attractive he is to her and stuff. And his response was this. He said, well, most fellas at church don't understand what it's like to be young and attractive. So he, in his mind, he has this special challenge because, you know, he just happens to be so attractive. There are women that will throw themselves at all sorts of people, and they know what to say, and what they're saying to the guy they're after is the same thing they said to another guy last week and another guy a few months before that, and who knows how many fellas before that, and who knows how many fellas after that. So while he's thinking, oh, it's because I'm so special, no, you're not. It's because you're letting an adulterous woman get your attention. You are not the first. This is not a virtuous woman who up to now she's been fine, but, oh, you know, here's this wonderful fella who can resist him. No, there's been plenty of fellas she hasn't resisted, but she knows how to get their attention. Sons, verse 7. Now listen to me. Do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her. Don't go near the door of her house. Just don't go there. Stay away. Don't let it get started. If she starts, just let her know you're married. Let her know you're not interested in that. And just keep your boundaries. Protect your boundaries. Your marriage is your marriage. You may be best friends with another couple here, That's wonderful. Y'all can do lots of things together. But you don't need to be going places with his wife, and he doesn't need to be going places with your wife. You need to respect boundaries. It goes on and talks about other warnings. Verse 9, lest you give your honor to others, your years to the merciless, lest strangers take their fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. Young fellas, as you go by, you may know some fellas that have gotten themselves in this already. I was hearing just the other day, I was having a study with a young man. He knows a guy who's already got 3 kids out of wedlock, so he's paying child support of most of his check. Goes child support here, child support there, child support there. And what do you suppose those loose women are doing with all that money? Putting it all away in, you know, for a college fund? Probably a lot of that is being used to party with their new boyfriend. It goes on to say that at the end, your body will be destroyed, and of course there's the sexually transmitted diseases. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the street, let them be for yourself and yours alone, not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. It didn't say rejoice in your wife while she's young. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. Protect your garden. Love your wife. Be true to your wife. And same for the wives. Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the church, even as Christ is the head of the church, in his body and is himself the Savior. As the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Now, of course, there are some exceptions. The disciples were to obey the laws of the land, but when the Jewish Senate said, don't talk about Christ, then what did Peter and John have to say? Well, we've got to obey God instead of you. If your husband tells you to disobey God, you don't disobey God, you obey God. But beyond that, it says, submit in everything to their husband. So a question now for the wives. Are you in submission to your husband? And, of course, I believe in general you are. But there may be some here, and they're saying, well, usually. And so then we'll ask a follow-up question. What do you mean, usually? Well, when he's doing what I want him to do, I submit. That's not submission. That's coincidentally going the same direction. Let me illustrate it like this. Have you ever been driving somewhere and you notice a car behind you is taking the same turns that you are? Does that ever happen? You know, you're going down this road, you take the ramp, it takes the ramp. You turn left to the light, it turns left to the light. You turn right on this street, it turns right. And after a while, you might think, are they going to the same place as I'm going? Are they following me? And each turn that comes by, you might be more convinced, I think they're following me. They must be going where I'm going. But then you get to 3rd Street, and you went right, and they went left. And you realize what? They weren't following you. It's just up until 3rd Street, they happen to want to go the same way as you were. Well, sometimes a wife, that's kind of like what her submission is like. It's like, this is where I want to go. Okay, he's right there. Fine, look at me following him. And I want to go here. Oh, good, he went there. Oh, look how well I'm following. And then she gets 3rd Street. Well, I'm not going to. That's not submission. For instance, there's things that God tells me to do that I want to do. God tells me to love my wife. I want to love my wife. God tells me to love my kids. I want to love my kids. But if God tells me to do this or not to do this, and I refuse to do that, is this proving submission to God? No, this is doing what I wanted to do anyway. I want to love my wife anyway. I want to love my children anyway. The test of submission comes when it wasn't what we wanted to do. And Jesus set an example of that, didn't he? In the garden. I think many things would have been easy for Jesus to do and joyous for Jesus to do. You remember when the widow of Nain is coming out of the village? Her husband's dead. She's got a child. And now he has died. And they buried quickly on the same day, so he's just died. And Jesus is able to go over there and stop the funeral procession and raise that child and give her back to her mom. How would you like to be able to do that? I mean, that would be the greatest day ever, you know, to just be able to do that for somebody, right? That would have been a joyous thing to do. To be spat upon, mocked, reviled, to bear the sin of all when you're holy and be scourged and hang on a cross to die, that's not something you're looking forward to. And what does he do the night before? He prays and he says, "Not my will, but thine be done." Submission. 1 Peter chapter 3, let's read that text. "In like manner, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, that they may be without the word gained by the behavior of their wives, beholding your chaste behavior coupled with fear, whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of braiding of hair, wearing of jewels, of gold, putting on apparel. Let it be the hidden man of the heart in the incorruptible apparel of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price." Would your husband describe your respect and demeanor as a meek and quiet spirit? "After this manner also aforetime the holy women also who hoped in God adorned themselves, being in subjection to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, even calling him Lord, whose children you now are, if you do well or not put in fear by any terror. Ye husbands," back to the husbands, "in like manner dwell with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, as also being joint heirs of life, to the end that your prayers be not hindered." I want to say two things about this. One, what does it mean, weaker vessel? Now, I'm about to give you my opinion here. When we're speaking, when we're reading the Word of God, when we're reading Scripture, that's the Scripture. When I give you my opinion, that's my opinion. So I don't expect you to be sure of what I'm saying here, but I'll throw it out there, see if it makes sense with the context. Most men are physically stronger than their wives. Sometimes they're more intellectual. Lots of times, also, they're not. But this is in a context of submission. And it began with telling citizens, Christians as citizens, to obey governors and kings. Then it said, servants, obey masters. And then it said, wives, obey husbands. In each case, who's being spoken to? The person who's weaker in authority. I don't know who the governor of Alabama is, but I would suspect there's several people in here physically stronger than him. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a variety of people in here intellectually stronger than him. Oh, her? Okay, all right. Well, then I suspect there's quite a number of people in here physically stronger than her. But politically, you're all weaker than her. Have you ever had a boss that you could out-arm wrestle? Maybe so. Have you ever had a boss where you were smarter than him? Maybe so. But when he was the boss, he was the one in the superior position, and you were the one in the weaker position. In marriage, woman is the weaker vessel. She's the one in the weaker position. Dwell with your wife according to knowledge. Here's one good way of looking at that. Gentlemen, how would we want our wives to lead us if God blew the whistle at halftime and said, "Switch courts"? If the Lord said, "All right, for this many years I've asked the men to be in charge, and now we're going to change, and now husbands submit to your wives. The wives are now going to be the head of the family." And now the rules are changed. A few of you may be beginning to perspire here. Would it be of interest to you what kind of leader she chooses to be? Yes, it would, wouldn't it? If God said to follow her lead, is it going to be easier to follow her lead if she says, wow, this is a big responsibility. I want to do a good job of this. I want to hear your concerns and listen to you and make decisions that will be good for you and for the children. And I want to sacrifice myself and lead in a good way and let you be supported. We'd be able to handle that easier, couldn't we? What if she decided, all right, I'm the boss, and just start throwing her weight around in a selfish way? Which of those would we want? Well, dwell with your wife according to knowledge. Understand what it would be like to be the person in the weaker position of authority. And we understand this in all sorts of ways. Some of you are employees, some of you are bosses. You know what? Oftentimes a good boss is somebody who has been a good employee, right? And that he treats those who he is over the way he would want to be treated, right? And then, of course, there's with knowledge in particular. We need to know our wives. And, you know, your wife is going to have certain aspects that you need to be aware of for her. And know that. And you know how we can know our wives? See, Jesus knew what was what's in their hearts without them saying anything. He would know. Like when Simon the Pharisee in Luke 7 is thinking something, it says Jesus answered him. We're not Jesus. And we may think we may know what she's thinking, but you know one of the best ways to find out what she's thinking? Listen to her. Which comes back to what's one of the biggest complaints women often have about their husbands. I wish he would listen to me. Wives, older women, teach the younger women, and we'll come back to this later in the week as we talk about child training. Older women, teach the younger women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands. You see all the focus there. And back in Genesis 3, when the curses were placed, where was the curse placed for providing for the family? On the man. By the sweat of his brow, he was going to have to provide the food. Where were the curses placed for the woman? Within her realm, in relationship to her husband and in her bearing of the children. That's her role. It doesn't mean that the husband never helps with the children by any means. It doesn't mean that the wife can never bring some income into the family as the worthy woman did in Proverbs 31. But was she a woman based on her home, or was she a woman based on her career? She was a woman based on her home. Other passages there. Let's move on from that. Proverbs 31, she's an excellent wife. Her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband trusts in her. This is the exact opposite of the woman in chapter 7. The woman in chapter 7, my husband's gone on a long journey. He's taking a bag of money with her. And what's she doing? She's an adulteress. The worthy woman, the heart of her husband trusts in her. He doesn't have to check. Where are you? Who are you with? Because he knows the heart of her husband trusts in her. Be that woman. She does him good and not evil all the days of his life. She stretches out her hand to the needy. She looks well to the ways of her household. Strength and dignity are her clothing. She considers a field, buys it, plants a vineyard. She makes the garments and takes them to town, and somebody sells it for her. The law of kindness is on her tongue. We're going to talk more about that in a moment. Physically, husbands and wives, don't defraud one another. We talked this morning about the image of the fireplace. The fire is beautiful, inviting, and warm where it's supposed to be, in the fireplace. Have that relationship. Appreciate that relationship with each other, and put these biblical principles in practice there. This one flesh, it's God's plan, it's fundamental, it's beneficial. When you take a young man from one family and a young lady from another family and you put them in the same house, and guys think one way and girls think another way, there's going to be some friction, okay? And they're going to be very close. And when you have close moving parts, there's friction. In a car, you have, if the parts are, if the cylinder's over there and another cylinder's over there and the wire's over there, that car's not going to work. It needs to be together. But you know what? You got a cooling system and you got oil to keep things the way they should be. You don't want that car to overheat and stuff. And God arranged marriage where you take a woman who is a very different person than a man and you put them together, and there's going to be some friction, but there is also a relationship that he put there that bonds them. There are chemicals in the brain that are released in this relationship that bond each other and helps. It's the kind of thing where, like, a young couple has a fight and then they kiss and make up and then they feel better. By the way, when you've had that argument, straighten it out with your spouse, kiss and make up. Don't go run talking to mama about it. Because you know what?
And then this is what he did, and that's what he said.
And he said, telling his mom, and you wouldn't believe, and she acted like this. Because you two are going to kiss and make up and be fine very soon. The mother-in-laws are not in on the kissing and making up. And this might not be okay with them anytime soon. Fix that problem there. Be considerate. Just think how these things apply. Matthew 7, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. For a good relationship, a physical relationship between a husband and wife, do unto others as you have them do unto you. Philippians 2, think not about your own things, but think about the things of another. Let it be secure. Proverbs 31, the heart of her trusts, his heart trusts in her, instead of Proverbs 7. Let it be impassioned. Proverbs 5 said, be intoxicated in her love and let it be loving. Let's finish tonight with a few words about communication. I'm not going to take time to read all these passages because I went a little bit longer on some of those things. But Colossians chapter 3, let's look at that passage. Colossians 3:19. After saying, wives, be in subjection to your husbands as befitting the Lord, it says in verse 19, husbands, love your wives and don't be bitter against them. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 9. Proverbs 21, verse 9. It is better to live in a corner of the housetop than in a house shared with a quarrelsome wife. There's two or three or four or so of these verses in Proverbs. There's one where it talks about a contentious woman is like a dripping on a rainy day. There's things that we need to say to each other, but how we say them makes a world of difference. And harshness is an ineffective way to do it, and nagging is an ineffective way to do it. Harshness does not breed respect, and nagging doesn't bring much respect and appreciation either. It gets tuned out. If mom gets the nag, I can't believe why. I don't know why everybody around here. And to the kids and to dad, it starts sounding like static on the radio. And you might think it's doing a whole lot. It's not. How we communicate is important. And sometimes somebody says, but I just get so frustrated. And as tension and frustration and irritableness increases, this is both for guys and girls, the more and more we're getting frustrated, the more and more that shows in our voice, what happens to our effectiveness. We get more and more effective, don't we? Oh, no, we don't. We don't at all, do we? Effectiveness goes the complete opposite way. I remember I had a friend of mine, he was a little socially awkward and people were giving him a rough time at college and they would do things to him just to get him riled. And so they'd propped his door shut and he couldn't get out of his room. And he said, I was so mad, you guys are jerks. And just, I said, that's why they're doing it to you. You know, and it's, yeah, but I'm just so mad. when we're not controlling ourselves, it doesn't make things go better. It makes things go worse. Speak the truth with kindness. Speaking the truth in love, Ephesians 4. A soft tongue breaks the bone. Proverbs 15, what turns away wrath? Soft answer. What stirs up anger? Grievous words. Well, he said something grievous, so I'm going to say something grievous. Well, I'm going to say something grievous back. How's that work? It doesn't work very well. Specific area, apologies. Some people don't apologize. I don't believe those people are going to heaven. We need to be able to apologize. We need to be able to admit when we're wrong. Luke 17:3 says, if your brother sins, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. If you say, even sometimes, hey, you point out something, says, I repent, forgive him. There needs to be a recognition of when we're wrong and admitting it. And in particular, sometimes men especially are prone not to apologize. And this is going to be the main focal point I want to end on tonight. Are you a man that apologizes? And if you are not, do not pretend and deceive yourself into thinking that you didn't look bad. And that's why some men don't apologize. Well, I don't want to look bad. It would undermine my authority. If I admit I was wrong, it'll make me look bad. You already looked bad. That's why we owe the apology. When somebody owes an apology and they will not apologize, does it make them look better? It makes them look weaker. It makes them less respectable. And it's wrong. Just recently, I've had to have two men apologize to their wives. One fellow, pornography. His wife calls. I go over there, and of course, he's got his lies. Oh, no, it was this. And kept threatening, no, it wasn't. He got to the truth of the matter, and I said, apologize to your wife. And it had him admit what he's been doing in different things, terrible situation. And I said, and it's just pathetic, the level of apology. She seemed to accept it, and if somebody's apologizing and not the best of it, I suppose it's a good thing to accept it. But I tell you what, there's some men that need to learn how to apologize. There's the minimizing apology. Perhaps I did make a mistake. His wasn't this bad, but these are just a variety of apologies. You may recognize some of these. I'm afraid I recognize a few of these as well. The minimizing apology. Perhaps I made a mistake. Maybe my reaction wasn't the best. Well, no one's perfect after all. In other words, no big deal, maybe I wasn't perfect. Well, duh, we all knew that to begin with. That's not an apology. When it's time to apologize, it's not time to act like this didn't matter. It's time to own up, I was wrong. I handled that wrong. That was unfair to say. I shouldn't have done that. That was inconsiderate, and I'm sorry. You don't deserve that. I'm sorry. I want to do better. There's accusation apology. I'm sorry you got so upset over that. Did everybody hear me apologize there? I said I was sorry. I'm sorry. You see where I put the blame? I'm sorry you were so bothered by that. I'm sorry you took it the wrong way. That's not an apology. In other words, here's your apology. Sorry, you messed up, but it's your fault. That's not an apology. There's the hypothetical apology. You may have heard someone give the hypothetical apology when they came forward to confess sin sometime. If I may have made a mistake, if I did anything that may have appeared to be wrong, in other words, I'm admitting nothing, likely did nothing, suppose even if I did, let's consider apologized for. There's the I'm sorry, but. Well, I'm sorry, but if you hadn't, I'm sorry, but you were the one, I'm sorry, but I only reacted that way because you, what did I just do to my apology? This kind of ruined it, didn't I? Why do we do that, though? Well, you know what? Sometimes when we've had an argument with our spouse, they did do something that caused us to get upset. There were some grievous words that started, and we wouldn't have said that if they hadn't said that. And you would like to call their, can I suggest something? Change the order in which you do it. Instead of saying, I'm sorry, but do this. I'd like you to think about whether or not you were being fair. But regardless of that, I know I shouldn't have said what I said. I shouldn't have used that tone of voice, and I'm sorry. You see, in both cases, you let them know there's something you want them to think about, but you see the difference of the focus. In the second one, did that feel like an apology? That feels like an apology. And you know what they're going to do? If their heart's good, they're going to realize, and I wasn't being fair, and I'm sorry about that. And then there's the angry apology. So I'm sorry, okay? Fine, I'm sorry. Are you satisfied? In other words, I said the words and I get off my back. You know where's a really good apology? Some of you may be thinking of where I'm thinking in the Bible. Where's somebody made a good apology? The prodigal son in Luke chapter 15. He said, I'm going to go to my father and I'm going to say, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I don't deserve to be your son. And when he got there, what did his father do? Ran to him and hugged him. Draw near to God, he'll draw near to you. And did the prodigal son say, ooh, now I don't need to apologize? No, he went ahead and said what he was going to say. I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I don't deserve to be your son. And what did the father do for him? Gave him much more than he deserved. That's an apology. If you have not been apologizing in your family, you need to start. And our children sometimes need to hear our apologies too. Art Adams was with us. He was talking about substance abuse. He was talking about one family where the father had an alcohol problem, but they said, but we keep it away from the kids. They never see it. They never see it. And he talked to the kids and he said, tell me about your dad. He said, the little 5-year-old girl said, which daddy? Are you talking about the drunk one or the real one? But on a lot of lesser things, when we owe an apology, give an apology. Don't be throwing jabs. Things like, my mistake, I should have learned by now not to expect too much. I shouldn't blame you. You get it honestly enough from your dad, mom, brother, sister. I should have listened to my mother when she warned me about you. Proverbs says, there's one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Let no corrupt speech proceed out of your mouth, but such as good for edifying as the need may be, that may give grace to them that hear. It's our choice. Do we nurture or neglect? Do we build up or tear down? Do we grow together or grow cold? If you need to change the communication in your family, do so. If you need to make some apologies, do so. Thank you for your attention. I've gone over tonight. I'll try not to do that tomorrow night. If you need to respond to the invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?